I really need this to work, please.
It's time for the Liquorland Podcast with JoJo Lewis. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. I'm really glad you could come to listen to it. Which by that, I mean, I'm glad you downloaded it because, the show would, I mean, it would exist without you, but it wouldn't be quite as fun if I didn't know at least one or two people were listening to it. I'm such a downer, you know? I don't know why I count myself out for what I'm doing here. It seems weird, because these conversations are interesting. I've always liked talking to folks, and really, I don't know why I'm counting myself out, but thank you for listening to this. I really appreciate it. Like I said earlier in a different recording on this same track with the opening part, my name is JoJo Lewis. This is the Liquor Lamp. I'm really glad you could be here. I need to stop thanking you. Anyway, I'm doing okay as a person. I have to tell myself that from time to time. I'm doing okay as a person. I'm writing a dissertation. That's why that's what I'm doing when I'm not making a podcast, when I'm not at comedy. I'm working on a book. That's actually what I'm doing. And it's making me face a lot of shit about myself, a lot of hard things about who I am, about aspects of my life that maybe I wasn't totally sure about, or things that I didn't know were even kicking around in there. I have to take that stuff and put it in a place where I can experience it and notice it and see it in front of me and think about it and exist in those moments. And it's hard. It's hard to face yourself. It's hard to look back on the moments in your life when you were embarrassed or when you were scared or when you were hurt and say, you know what, that's a part of me. That's a part of what makes me who I am. It's not something I can deny. It's not something I can ignore. It's just, it's there. It's real, and it's in me. And that's what I've been having to deal with lately. I've been obsessing lately over middle school, which probably not the best time in anybody's life. I think we can without a doubt say that middle school is probably the worst experience that anyone can ever have. It's shitty. You don't know who you are yet. You don't know who anybody else is. You don't know what you're interested in. And you really don't know if it's ever going to get better. That is the experience of middle school. That's what I'm focusing on right now. That's what I've been doing today. It's just, oh, I remember. Yeah, there was that one girl in class who just kept making fun of my hair. Just, that was her thing. I didn't have very good hair in middle school. I had this weird sort of I put in too much hair gel. I was the kid with the hair gel with the hair combed to the side. Like you know the kid who, if he got picked on, you're like, yeah, looking like that, that's what you get. That was me. I was that kid. And I would do this thing where I would slick my hair to the side, and it still kind of does that because I did it for so long with so much hair gel. Except now, it's looser. It looks kind of a little more hipstery. At the time, it was just like a gelled, congealed, you know, helmet. It was a helmet of gelled hair, and I got picked on because of it. Because it looked dumb, and also that sometimes there'd be just strands of hair that would just shoot straight up, and I would have those, and there were girls would be like, nice hair, Joe. And I'd just be like, oh, fuck, I can't deal with that right now. I'm too busy. I'm too busy preparing for the Science Olympics. I was a Science Olympian. It's not a... Oh, fuck, I didn't even remember that until just now. Jesus, what's wrong with me? I shouldn't be having breakthroughs right now. I need to be focused. Need to be focused on what life is. I don't know. I remember when I was that age, when I was younger, I remember that was the age I really started to get into comedy, when I was really interested in it. Because every Friday night, that's what I did. I would watch stand-up comedy on Comedy Central, And in watching those shows, I felt some kind of escape or some kind of freedom that I didn't feel when I was at school, that I didn't feel when I was feeling like the outcast of a kid. I would be sitting there watching comics just crushing on TV. And I was like, man, I really want to be a part of that world. I really want to be in that. I want to be able to tell jokes and be smart in that way. And then we had a talent show at my school, and there was a kid who tried to do stand-up comedy during the day, because it was during the day is when the talent show was. And he told a joke. I think he only had like 2 minutes of material. He told a joke, and after it didn't land, he was like, thanks, and he left. And as he failed, in my head, I felt that failure in my body, and I was like, well, fuck, I'm never going to be able to do that, and I'm never going to be able to be good at this. That is something that I wrestled with for years, that I had a dream that I wanted to follow. I had something I really wanted to do, and I compromised it for years. For about 14 years, I denied myself, why don't I try to do that? Why don't I start going to mics? Why don't I start writing jokes? Why don't I start being a part of that world that I want to be a part of? I said no to that when I was a kid, and it dictated a lot of the problems that I have as an adult to this day. That if I just, when I was younger, if I just, you know, I had more confidence, or if I just believed in myself a little more, like, you know, if you want to do that, you can do that, Joe. If I just had that then, like I have it now. Well, the reason I'm bringing all this up is today on the show, I'm talking to Idris, who's a good buddy of mine. And this is the second time I've ever tried to do a recording with Idris, mostly because the first time I tried to do a recording with Idris, it fucked up really bad. It comes with the territory of having really shoddy equipment. I didn't know what happened, but it just broke on me. I just couldn't get it to work right. And the recording came out, like, parts of it were fine, but other parts of it were not so fine. Like, there were other parts that were just completely inaudible. So I had to just say, you know, you need to come back up to my house and we'll do this again. And he said, sure. And he came back up, and honestly, I'm glad that he did that, because the talk the second time was so much better than the first. He opened up, and we started really talking about origins, and we started talking about, you know, the stories that make you up, and the stories that maybe you're not ready to accept, or the ones that make you consider who you are in the world and what's important to you. That was my talk with Idris. And I'm so glad that it happened, because the first time it was more about, you know, just comedy in general and abstract shit, and which I like. I love talking about that stuff, but I wanted more, and I'm glad he came back, because now I got it. And I know at some level he's going to be like, well, you tricked me into revealing more than I wanted. And might be true. It's not, but it might be. Maybe I intentionally had a shitty recording, so I knew we'd have to come back and reveal a little bit. It was a really good talk. But the one thing I am sad about that Idris, I had to do two takes, is we did end up talking about something on the first one that I want to bring up before I start the thing. And it was something that me and him kind of came to. It was talking about how, growing up, neither one of us had very many friend connections. Like, we didn't have any friends. And what ended up happening was, as we got older, we started noticing that when we did make friends, we would do this thing where we would say hi to them and hang out for a while and then just sort of disappear. Like, that was a very common thing. I would go to my friends and I would be like, hey, guys, let's hang out. Let's go to a bar. Let's get a meal. I'll talk. I'll tell stories about what's going on with me. And then, after that event, I would not see them for months. That was something that Idris does, and that's something that I do. And we started trying to figure out why it was we did that. And the conclusion that we came to was, well, part of the reason we do that with our friends is sort of the reason that we like doing comedy, especially in settings like an open mic or in a place we've never been before, because we have control over how people perceive us, how they think of us. And if I, you know, if you see your friends a couple of times, they start to get like a sense of you, and it becomes out of your control. So what we do, me and Idris, and probably a lot of people who do comedy or just, you know, have weird kind of social issues, we try to keep our friends in a constant state of having just met us. Because if we can do that, we can make them seem like a consistent open mic crowd. We're always in a position of having just met our friends. And I have done that with people I've known for years. I've known people for 3-4 years now that I only catch up with them. I never just carry on a friendship. A part of it is I don't totally know how. A little bit, like people just have friends. I don't know how you can just do that. Or maybe part of it is I am somewhat scared of being vulnerable in a way that people just have a running tally of the things I've done and the things I've said and the way that I am. I don't know. I don't know which is the solution or which is the answer. I do know it's what I do. And Idris told me he does that also. So, I mean, you be the judge. Anyway, that was the best gem from the first recording of Idris. And I feel that this episode is nothing but gems. So I'm going to stop talking because the episode is an hour 20 and it's a really good one. So please stay tuned and enjoy my talk with the very funny and very interesting Idris. Take a listen. Say something real quick.
Saying something real quick.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Looks right. Like the levels are good. So, yeah, thanks for coming back to try again.
Yeah, all the way to El Dorado Hills.
Yeah, that sucks.
I mean, no, it doesn't suck that bad because on the way here, the difference from the first time is that I started like looking at it like, man, you have to drive here and back every day, don't you?
Yeah.
When you do comedy.
Yeah, I drive a good 40 minutes to do any shows.
Yeah. Right. Well, what about Vacaville? Is that further or is that...
Vacaville?
Yeah.
Vacaville is way further. Vacaville's south. Are you thinking of Placerville?
Where's ever Steph Garcia's show is? I haven't done it, so you have, and I don't know where it is.
I haven't done Steph's show.
You haven't done her lockdown brewery?
Oh, that's in Folsom.
That's in Folsom. So that's kind of closer, right?
Yeah, that's relatively closer. That's a good 15 minutes from here.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's
I thought
more local.
Was, yeah. I drove past it, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's like getting out to SAC to do shows is a drain.
Yeah, it is. Well, you have to do that later today, don't you?
Yeah, I'm doing the Fresh Five today.
I was listening to it.
Yeah.
Have you heard it?
Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah.
That was a good show.
That was an interesting show. I didn't get to hear all of it. When it got to my part, I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to listen to the rest of this.
Yeah, I listened to it. It was a good show.
Yeah.
I'm doing today. I have with Emma Haney and D. Tyler and Robert Barry.
Yeah, Robert Barry is telling me about it.
I feel weird about it.
Why?
Because I honestly think I'm on the show specifically because I'm really good at going first and I'm really good at taking bullet. Like, that I think is something that's why I'm on the show. Because I sincerely believe they're all like a class above me in terms of comedic ability. I really believe that.
You're like the booster gold to this whole situation.
I'm a booster gold.
So you just have to be there.
Yeah, that's I don't know. It's what it is. I'm excited about it, but at the same time, it's like I'm only there as the novelty of I'm really good at going first.
Well, you are the extension of Brian, then, I guess.
Yeah, I hope it.
But I think that, I mean, it's always different when it comes to new, when it comes to novelty in general. It's like the whole show is about being new and having new, fresh five.
Yeah.
So even though someone might be comedically, you might have seen them do like, oh, they're awesome on stage. Who knows what happened to 5 minutes?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And also, then it's a It always depends on kind of the who's there, too.
Yeah, I like the show in the sense that I get to see, like, because I don't get to... It's a weird thing where I see the same comics week to week, and they don't often do new jokes.
Yeah.
Or they'll do a new joke, and it's, like, not even a... It's, like, not even a piece of their act. It's, like, yeah. I'll do a new one-liner.
Yeah.
That's not... To me, not to be, seem like I'm talking down to people, but it's, like, why... Why don't you grow more? Like, why aren't you?
Yeah, I know.
Why aren't you pushing yourself more a little bit?
I think it's that too. I know that it's that for some. Like, they're not even trying to challenge themselves in that way. But I think also that I've talked to some new people about it. Like, hey, are you trying to get a joke better, or are you trying to remember a joke better, or are you trying to be funny?
Uh huh.
And when we have the same people in front of us half the time, like half the people are the same, it's kind of stupid to do it the same jokes. Cause you got to do something new. Cause these people are going to laugh again at the same joke. It's going to lose its lust.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it has to do with, sometimes it's just someone trying to do jokes to remember them. Cause I know like at least 4 weeks after doing a joke and I haven't said it for like 3 weeks, I don't remember the joke.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's why I record my shit. Like, yeah. I have a, like, if a joke does well, I have a recording of how it went. I record every show for that reason.
Yeah.
But also, it's like, to me, it speaks to a misunderstanding of how art works. Not so much just comedy, but, like, the way that the process of being an artist works.
So, what do you mean?
Well, here's the thing. When I was in school, there would be this thing where you would have people who would write a story.
Yeah.
And they would keep working on that one story for years.
Yeah.
And what was frustrating was, it's like, look, I mean, if you're still working on this and you don't know how to make it better, or you don't know how to improve it, or you don't know what to change, the fact that you keep working on it is a problem now.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I mean, you only have so much ability that when you create something, there's only so much you can really do to bring it up to what par is for you.
Yeah.
And at that point, you can't work on it anymore. You have to put it away. And that's why, like, you should try to always do. I've been told, like, you always need to be making new mistakes. That's the one thing that I really remember. Was, like, yeah. If you're doing art, you should always be trying to make a new mistake.
See, this is where I have the conflict, but now I think I resolved it in my head, because I agree more with you with this, because, you know, I don't do a lot of the same jokes after about a month. I don't think.
Right.
So I don't really do jokes over and over again. But the issue I normally have is when I watch like a YouTube of a Seinfeld who's been doing the jokes for a year. Right. And that he's a way different class, but he's of that mindset to do a joke that long.
Yeah.
But I think the difference of it is that he does a subject that long. He doesn't do just a joke that long.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll, like, focus on a Pop-Tart joke for 6 years, but it's because he's trying to make it better. Like, working on it to the point that it's small. And it's not like he's just doing that joke, too. He's sorts of other jokes.
Yeah, the subject matter, it's like, I'm going to do all these bits on Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
But they're all different bits.
Yeah.
But they all come from the same subject. Yeah, see, I don't think, like, that's what I think is interesting. Like, when you do stuff like that. Because subjects are broad. It's like, oh, relationships or dogs and shit like that.
Yeah.
And it's fine if you're going to, like, you can't, the subjects that you're interested in, you can't really just ditch those.
Yeah.
Because that's more like, well, who are you?
Right.
But, I mean, to do the same bit in the same way.
Yeah.
For months or years even.
Yeah.
That to me is like, I couldn't imagine you caring about that.
Yeah, because at some point you're saying it over again, and you're on stage, and then you're probably going on autopilot. Like, you're thinking about maybe doing the lawn next week while you're talking about, like, Jefferson or something, you know? Like, it's not even present to you anymore, so what's the point even being up there?
Yeah, and it's like, well, if you're... I can only imagine you get enjoyment from that for so long.
Yeah.
It's just the same bit over and over.
And I think what you were saying was... that focusing on one bit that long or just a story that long in your example, and you at some point starting to not help at all.
Yeah.
And I think really that you have to leave it alone. Because I know with old jokes, you can come back to them.
And yeah,
then you find
yeah.
a new way to say them, and maybe the same words, but just saying them differently.
Yeah, because you have experience not just of the performative aspect,
yeah.
but also just of the fact that, hey, if you've done more jokes, different jokes, if you've written more, then that actually gives you a better understanding of what you have before. So you have, like, I have bits that I now, even, it's only been doing it a year, but I now have bits that are at the start where, oh, I can take that piece that I had that sort of worked and put it somewhere new yeah. that works better.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that that's kind of the way I think you should be. Work, not just at this, but any type of artistic medium. What I see happening is the opposite. What I see happening is there are comics who will do, like, the same five.
Yeah.
Over and over
the
again.
The exact order, too.
Yeah.
Exact order.
And same order. And the same way. They have the same pauses, the same breaks. They have crowd work in the same way.
Yeah.
They go, and, like, it's totally rehearsed. And it bothers me a little bit that, like, well, why aren't... I mean, yeah, it's a well-made piece, but then why do you keep doing it? If you're doing it just to learn to do it, you don't need an audience for that. You don't need to take up our time.
Yeah,
to do that.
Well, yeah, that's true too.
Yeah.
And people are there that've seen it before. It's like I don't know. I think it's stupid. And I think it's a waste of time, and I think it's a waste of their time, and it's also a waste of their energy because they could probably be using all that focus on new things that'll probably make them happier to say it.
Yeah.
You'll go up there, you'll enjoy saying it because it's something new, and then you get a new response. And now you know that, okay, maybe that doesn't work, but now I'm pretty sure that even week to week, that what we're thinking about is different.
Yeah.
So to even say the same things you were saying 5 months ago, like, that's not, is that even relevant to you?
Yeah,
anymore?
It's like, are you even still that person anymore?
Yeah. It's not, I think I would want to grow with doing comedy just outside of it and inside of it and any other thing I do. I wouldn't want to be Kobe at 18 as Kobe now, like, or Kobe at 24 where you're like in Colorado with a girl and now you're still that guy at 36. I think you got to move on.
Yeah. You got to do something different.
You got to do something.
Kobe got to do something else.
You can't keep messing
something.
You can't keep doing that.
How much more basketball can you really play? Honestly?
Yeah.
Come on.
I think that's, you just got to do something different. You got to be something different. I think, in general, that's just a bad idea to stay in one thing.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I'm working on this idea for a joke, but it's more so just because it's something I noticed is I don't watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
And so I'll have a show be my favorite show for a really long time.
Uh-huh.
And people will be talking about, like, Breaking Bad around me, and they'll really get into it. And I'll be like, I don't really care. And I know it's a phenomenal show, but I don't care because I'm not going to watch it. Even if I want to watch it, I won't watch it because
right.
I just don't watch TV like that. And my favorite show about a year and a half ago was The Wire. And it was gone for maybe like 4-3 years. It hadn't been on like TV at all.
Yeah.
And now it's like Orange is the New Black. And that's not even on TV. It's not even on TV. It's like not an option. But the reason why I even looked into that show was because I wanted to talk to someone about how happy they were about that show. So I looked at it because they were like, oh, they want to talk about it. So let me find out about it. And that's the only reason why I'll ever watch TV is
to kind of keep up with other people.
Yeah. Just to keep up in the conversation. Cause the amount of energy people have on like just talking about a show is mind boggling. I mean, like they're going to it, like they break it down. Like, you know who the people are.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay, well,
I do. Yeah. I have a friend like that who she's super into TV, like really into it. And she's smart. She knows how to talk about it as like as art. So she'll really get into it and really explain it. And she knows about filmmaking and you can just sit there and listen to her talk about it. And it's, I feel weird. I feel like a fake person listening to her and
right.
going, oh yeah, because it's like, I have no frame of reference
yeah,
for
nothing.
All the shows you're naming or all the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
I feel bad. Like, I feel like when I'm done talking to her, I'm like, I have fucking homework.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
not feel like a piece of shit right now.
That was the only reason. I was thinking about doing Breaking Bad because I was outside of Luna's and it was DJ Sandu and Nick Aragon and maybe, I don't know if it was Carlos. But it was like four people, and they started going in on like Breaking Bad and that show that has like a, he's not a dog, He's the guy who played in Lord of the Rings.
Wilfred.
And they were talking about it on a psychological level. And I was like, what the fuck is going on right now? Like, I only kept up at the beginning because they started talking about Dark Knight. And I was like, yeah, I got this. But then they started going into shows. And I was like, man, I have to buy a ticket to watch things on screen.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the only way I'll ever enjoy anything.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I can't, like, there's, like, fuck. It's hard to find. I think that in some ways it's kind of good that when you're around people who are super into stuff, they kind of get you to be into stuff, yeah, too. That's good. But it's like, man, there's some people I don't want to hang out with because I know I don't have a frame of reference with you.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. And it goes with the first thing you were talking about, is that when you start doing comedy on the road, most of your time is in hotels. So you're going to have to watch a lot of TV.
Uh-huh.
But the funny thing is that I don't see that, like, showing itself in a lot of people's acts.
Really?
Like, I will watch, and the reason why I thought about this is that he'll use it as, like, a way to segue into a joke, and I don't know his name. He was on Mad TV, and he did, like, he's really amazing at doing, like, Shaq impressions and rappers impressions, and...
Tracy Morgan?
No, not Tracy Morgan. Goodness, I don't know.
Not Tracy Morgan. Phil Lamar?
No, I don't. Phil Lamar is great. But yeah. He's not the guy. I don't know his name. I don't like him that much comically because he does this. He has the same bit for like the last 7 years. And maybe 4 years ago when like Kevin Hart blew up.
Yeah.
He was on Shaquille O'Neal's like big thing. And he was doing the same jokes I heard him do for maybe 8 years.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, dude, the first thing he said was, as a comic, I'm oftentimes in the hotel, so I watch things. And then he goes into a bit he's done for like 6 years.
Oh, like,
and I'm
like, lie?
What is this? What is this ridiculousness that you're doing right now? Like, come on, man. I know you have to be funnier than that. So I know that you're not saying the funny things on stage.
Yeah.
That's what I feel cheated out, because I know you're funnier than that. I know you have to be because you've been doing it this long. Like, there's no way that you couldn't have come up with something after 8-10 years of comedy, of being around other funny people, that something didn't pop up and like, you know what, I should say that on stage. Because I get that all the time. People say that.
Sometimes I think, well, maybe it could have been like, well, if it's like an important show or something, it's like, oh, I'm going to shelve that stuff that I know that means something. I'm going to do the surefire.
Yeah.
The stuff I know works that has years of experience. But yeah, I mean, like, that's a question to wrestle with when you get to that level
yeah.
of ability where you're like, well, I have to make a conscious decision on what I'm going to do. I can do the bit that's, you know, that I know works that maybe I've done to death.
Yeah.
Or I can do the bit that I know matters to me that might not be perfect yet.
Well, I think that the difference between those two things are just hard work. Like, if you put in the time and with the name, you can kind of go into any comedy club and get on stage.
Yeah.
It's not like you can't go somewhere, anywhere that has a microphone and get on the microphone. And I know that this is weird name dropping. I didn't even drop his name. But I remember when Nick came back this week and I was like, I want to get on stage because I want to prove that I'm good now, you know?
Yeah.
You know
what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out. Stephen Fury and other people were talking about how he got on the mic at poetry night at Luna's.
Yeah. He just kind of showed up.
And I remember that was a sort of like hunger that I had earlier on where I would get on any mic that was there.
Yeah.
I would get on open mics where there would be music. Any place, and it just makes you better because you're doing jokes in front of people that might not want to hear anything you have to say.
Uh-huh.
So you have to find a way to make that joke, one, like, mean something to someone who doesn't give a shit and grab their attention, then also make them laugh.
You'd all like, or more like, you'd have to have the kind of confidence that would, you have to believe, you really have to believe in yourself.
Yeah, you're going to be like, jokes,
hey, too. I'm going to do a joke in front of a room of people who were listening to jazz music a second ago. Like, yeah. That takes confidence.
Yeah.
And that's, like, I'm glad he did that. I was like, fuck, that's pretty...
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the level that you're supposed to be at, though. That's the level you're supposed to aspire to, because Billy Crystal was doing jokes in front of, like, singers, in front of festivals. That's what you want to do in the first place. So why not do that? I mean, I think Dave Chappelle was doing the Apollo before Aretha Franklin at 19. I'm like, how can you not want to? You should do that any chance you can, because it's really about you. It's not about them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just practice.
And it's just like how good are you at just switching it on in any environment?
Yeah.
Because that's really like after a certain point, I imagine you can just be like, oh, I can just turn on my funny and just do it.
Yeah.
But it's like if you don't push yourself, if you don't go to environments where you know you might not win.
Yeah.
Then you might that'll harm you in the long run. Like that'll hamstring your ability to react and adapt and be good at it. Because that's more like that falls back in line with doing the same set. If you're doing the same set in the same places, then you're not growing at all. You should have in my mind, if you're going to be doing comedy as like an art form, you should have it set up such that you'll go to rooms where you know it's a safe room, and you can experiment. But then you need to go to rooms where it's like, probably won't work here.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go up to bomb here.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only reason really you go.
Yeah.
And you do that because, like, you need that broad level of experience. So then when you fail in the good room, you recognize why. When you do well in the really shitty room, you recognize why, because you have that kind of a balance.
Yeah, and I think doing as much as possible, as wide of a spectrum as possible on, like, where rooms are, what type of people are there, you get more perspective on your comedy.
Yeah.
And then also you get more perspective on just failing. It's like, oh, that's not that bad.
Uh-huh.
It's just one night, and tomorrow night I'm going to do even better.
or
do even worse. And then it's like, oh, okay, I had a week of horrible, but then I have a year behind me of like, oh, I've did this, and a bomb doesn't really mean that much. You can kind of take it when you're on stage, and also that probably gives you confidence. And the fact that you just know that, well, this joke didn't work, that means I can keep going.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really affect anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And even you may even know how to save a bomb.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to learn.
Yeah, and that only comes with time. So you know how to work jokes work and also how to get yourself out of a hole.
There's moments when I've been doing comedy lately where there are lines where the way I have it written, I have points where I'm like, here's the punchline. If it doesn't work, I'll sometimes keep talking until I get a laugh at that part. Just because I know, like, I have, like, there's, it's almost like an instinct, like, I'm going to learn to sit here for a second. Even if I'm not saying anything, in order to get people to laugh, to initiate the next part of the joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes that leads you to going, oh, I guess that was too good for you guys, or something like that. But it's like, you kind of have to, like, you learn by that type of a struggling of against people being quiet.
Yeah. And I think it commands attention, too.
Oh, yeah. Because
by being silent, it just means that it's building something up.
Yeah, yeah. Even if it's something stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like just that like a pause can build up. A pause can create emotion sometimes better than, like, yelling can.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm not really a big yeller, so.
Yeah.
Not in just on stage. I think that's just an on stage thing, because I'm super argumentative, like very, very argumentative. I get into arguments about the dumbest things.
Like what?
Let me try to remember the last argument. Most of them are family or personal and like interpersonal arguments. I don't normally argue with strangers.
Uh huh.
But the last time that I had, let me try to think of an argument I had with a stranger. Because those are always funner.
Just someone like, oh, fucking care about your opinion. Fuck you.
Yeah, but I'm normally pretty fair with strangers, because I don't think they're smart in general. If I don't know you, I don't think you're smart enough to have an argument with. But let me see. The reason why I was thinking about this is because I play back arguments all the time in my head.
Like what happened?
All the time. Like, dang, I lost at that point. If I could just get a time machine, that's the only thing I would use with a time machine, is to go back and win arguments and then move on. Because that's all I really want to do.
It's so petty.
I know, it's very petty. All I want to do is win arguments. Let's see. I think probably the... have so many petty arguments. The pettiest argument that I can think of was hot links. I had an argument with, I think it was Diana and Jacqueline. They didn't agree with me, but I ordered hot links at this place down the street from the Comedy Spot. And I wanted to, and they had hot links on the thing. It was said $3. It was $3 for a hot link.
Right.
And I was like, okay, can I get a hot link? And they gave me, and they asked me, oh, do you want coleslaw with that? And I was like, that's kind of weird. I've never really had coleslaw with a hot link, but I was like, whatever, have it. Okay. And then they brought it out and they put coleslaw on top of the hot link. And I was like, why? And it was in a bun too. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I don't want coleslaw on the hot link. I just want a hot link. And they brought it back and they gave me no bun and a hot link. And I was like, you guys are fucking idiots. I was so irritated by that. But I was talking to them, like going back and forth with them, because Jacqueline works in food, right?
Uh-huh. So
she knows about the service part. I did too. But I was like, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
And they're like, don't be that guy. And I was like, looking back, I was like, there's no way that you guys shouldn't be on my side on this. Hot link should always come with a bun. There's no reason for me to say bun with the hot link. Like, when you say hot dog, you don't think of just the link. You're thinking of a hot dog in a bun.
Yeah.
So why would I have to say, I could have just said link. I could have just said link and that would have made sense. But I said hot link. I was like, I didn't understand. And plus, it was $3. It was $9 with the coleslaw in it. And I was like,
how is it $9 with the coleslaw?
I don't even know. I did get tater tots on the side.
Oh, okay.
But it was $9 still. And that still weirds me out. That should have been like $6.
Yeah.
That should have been $6. So it was overcharged and also that. And I was like, this is ridiculous.
And that was an argument you really wanted to win?
I really want to win that argument. Like, to this day, right. I still want to win that argument. Like, that is unacceptable behavior. On the restaurant's part. And Diana and Jacqueline's like, you guys, one, as just acquaintances to degree of friends, should be on my side in general on a hot link conversation. Every conversation about hot links, you should be like, yes, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing that people want to let go. Like, yeah, I'll let you have that. That victory.
And then two, I think hot links itself shouldn't ever make anyone think about just the link. I don't think that ever. I went like days afterwards just asking people randomly, walking in. I walked into Bel Air, I think, no, Raley's, and I was mailing something. And then after I mailed it, I was like, so when I say hot link, what do you think about? And she was like, what? And I said, when I say hot link, what do you think? Like, she was thinking, like, oh, what line, like, aisle do you need to go on to get links? And I was like, okay. No, when I say hot link, she says, do you think of the without the bun? She says, yeah. And I was like, nah, you don't count. You work at a grocery store. And then I went down to the gas station, and I talked to a lady at the gas station. I said, when you think of a hot link, what do you think of? Do you think of it without the bun? She's like, no, who does that? And I was like, you count. You're a real person. You work at it. I was like, she makes more sense to me. She's a commoner. You work at a grocery store.
You're a commoner. What the fuck? Steve, okay, you really did do that?
Yeah, I did all these things. I went and asked people questions anytime I went through a transaction just to see, like,
that's what dedication.
Yeah, I'm very dedicated
to that weird idea.
I think that it's true. I think that most people think that aren't. I don't even know who would. Really, when someone goes to a family cookout and you say, oh, we're getting hot links, or not just getting the link, they would say link. They would say link.
Well, it seems weird to me is how obsessive you are over this topic.
Yeah, I am.
Because it's like, there are real problems. And it's interesting to me that you would devote, like, energy and time to, like, do you ever feel like you get caught up in your own head about stuff that you think about? Like,
yeah, I know that happens almost all the time. Almost all the time. I get obsessive about things that I know in the back of my head. Because you'll go through these scenarios where you're, like, watching your own thoughts. And you're like, what are you doing over there?
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, hey, this is fun, though.
Is that kind of how... Because that's the thing I noticed with your kind of comedy. It's like, it's normally sort of weird, kind of out there stuff, and like you don't make references, but I would argue it's kind of esoteric, the things you mention.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you feel at some level like some of your jokes are more like stuff you've obsessed on or stuff that you've like devoted a lot of thought to?
No, the only thing that I know I've obsessed on, actually none of my material except most of the material I have come up with really isn't things I obsess on.
Really?
And I think that I probably should go that way because there's things that I do think a lot about that I never talk about on stage, which is why I always bump into those moments where I'm like, what am I talking about? Like, I don't want to do this anymore because I'm not talking about the things that are always on my head.
Right.
But actually I think most of the things I do obsess about are like, shouldn't be obsessed about, but they're very common thoughts. Like very, very common thoughts. Like things about, I think I obsess about, I think I obsess about things like, the one thing that I do obsess about that I wish I wasn't is probably my ex. Sometimes you'll hear me on stage like blurt out something that's like, why are you that angry about this?
Yeah. It's like, why are you angry about this? This is crazy.
Right. But it's not, those are probably the only jokes that I think are related to like really. That's probably things I obsess about.
Why do you obsess about that so much?
Because
that's pretty far in the past.
That's
right?
That's a year now. It's been a year now, okay. And it's been 6 months since the last time I talked to her. But it's something that I think it's probably one of the worst relationships I've ever had, which is reason to not even obsess about it, right? Just dismiss it and move on. But I think it's the amount of investment that I put in a worse results type of thing,
uh-huh.
It affects me on a self-esteem level. Like, it makes me think, like...
Oh, like, you feel kind of stupid for having done all the work?
Well, and then not just the work, but also just making really, really bad, like, rookie mistakes. Because it was the first time I ever tried to be serious about a relationship. Like, oh, marriage is a possibility, things like that. And it's like, it really failed. Like, on so many levels.
Well, what's the short version of that? I feel like I've heard pieces of it, but you've never told me the whole, like, here's, like, this happened and this happened.
All right, this is... This. It's a crazy relationship all the way from start to finish.
Okay.
I met her at her job. She was working at the co-op, and I went to the co-op on purpose to meet her because my friend went on one date with her. He really liked her, but it didn't work out. They never talked to each other again. But he gave me like an image of what she looked like. And I was like, I'm interested just to see her.
Okay.
I saw her and I was up there trying to post up like Tudor ads for me. So like, oh, because they have a wall there that you could post up Tudor ads. And I went up there for that. And also I was thinking about possibly working there. So I saw her. I didn't say hi. I just looked at her. She looked at me, blah, blah, blah. Then finally we ended up, I'm sitting outside trying to fill out paperwork for the job there. And she comes up and she says hi to me. And from there it kind of builds into I think we start talking that. Wait, what happened?
See, you talking.
Yeah, so we started from there. Let me try to remember exactly how it went down. I was playing... It was weird because I played hard to get. And
okay.
It was a very strange situation because she approached me first. But I put myself in that position to be approached.
Right.
And I was going to approach her that day, but I didn't see her. She came up from behind me and said hi. So it went from there. I got her number. I didn't call. Took a whole week. And then at that point in the week, I was like, I hadn't called in a week, so I can't call now. She's probably not going to know who I am, so I went back up there to see if she was there.
You're putting a lot of effort into this.
Right. It was unnecessary. It was like back and forth because I didn't call for a week. I could have called her and talked to her like a normal person, but I didn't. And I went up there and I saw her, but she was going in. It wasn't her day on to work. She was going in at the same time I did.
Right.
And from there, we went on a date that day, and then that day we became boyfriend and girlfriend.
Okay.
And a month in, and we became boyfriend and girlfriend for this reason. This is the stupidest reason. I was standing there, and she looked across the street, and it was across the street from the co-op parking lot is a parking structure.
Right.
And she said, do you want to go over there and do something? And I was like, and it was a test. I knew it was a test. And I was like, okay, nah, I think we're moving way too fast. She said, oh, that's perfect. Perfect answer. And I was like, I should have known she's fucking crazy at that point. But she she says, to do anything, we have to be in a relationship. And that's why I got in the relationship. Because I was thinking, oh, in a month, I'll be gone. I will never talk to this girl again. And that was my plan. Plan was to do that. And this is one of the things where I was like, the problem with that the relationship is that it revealed some of the worst things about myself and probably the worst things about herself.
Well, what was the things that revealed about you?
I didn't think I was a cheater.
Really?
And I didn't think I was a cheater at all. I thought I could just say bye like a normal person and then talk to someone else. And I pussied out and I kissed a girl and I told her about it. And the problem with that is that she had told me at the beginning of the relationship that she had been cheated on in the past. So it was a soft spot for her
right
to do it again. And I thought, and I told her thinking she would break up with me and I would be let go. And it was the worst thing I'd think. And it was probably that guilt that let me keep going in that relationship for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
So you felt like guilt. So, okay. So then in that sense, like, how long in your relationship did
before 2 years? You, by that point it was only a month and a half.
So in a month and a half, like what compelled you to do it? Was it like
to kiss another girl? Yeah. The thing was is that other girl was someone that I was talking to before I even met this girl, and I was talking to her beginning as a friend. She was supposed to be my tattooist. Never got a tattoo. Still don't have a tattoo. But it started off that way, and it never happened. But we ended up talking, and then it seemed like she was a girl that got me a lot better than my present girlfriend at that time.
Who you really were only a girlfriend with because of the thing.
And yeah, well, only the thing. Yeah, just to have sex with her, basically. And that was but I was talking to this girl, and I felt like we had a better connection.
Right.
But the problem was that she didn't live here anymore. She lived in the Bay Area. And there was no way that was going to happen conveniently.
Uh-huh.
And one time we hung out, we kissed, and I told her about this. I told my ex about this, my girlfriend at the time, and I thought she was going to break up with me. She got really mad. It was over the phone. She screamed. And about an hour later,
uh-huh,
she called me back, and she was like, it was just a kiss. It wasn't a problem. But that guilt compelled me to do one of the dumbest things.
What'd you do?
I said, you can go and do the same degree of something I did. And from there on, the worst relationship from there on. It was tit from tat for that from then on for like months.
Really?
Not like months, more like year. A year from then on. For like, she went and did something. She said she did it. She, I guess, there's no reason to hold back here, right?
No, I don't see why.
It just feels weird telling her her shit, but yeah, she went and she went with a guy in her classroom, who was interested in her, and she watched him, and she told me these details, masturbate in front of her, and I was like, stupid enough to think that, oh, that's it, that's all there's gonna be to this. And I was like, you got what you got, we're even now. And then she told me this over the phone. I was like, all right, we're even now, blah. Well, about a month later, or less than a month later, and this is the problem that was one of the worst things ever. One of the worst days I've ever had. Because it was a great day, uh-huh, in terms of our relationship, like having fun, just having genuine fun. And then at some point, we were playing and her phone was out. I pulled her phone and I looked at the phone and it was a text message from the guy saying that we should have drunk sex. And I was like,
ugh.
I gave it back to her and I was like, you know what? And I tried to walk toward the car. And try not walk to the war of the car. I went into silent mode. Immediately was my second response was like, oh. Because she was trying to fight me from seeing the phone. And now it was play fighting. It wasn't like seriously like don't see it. So it was surprising to see that. And then I went into silent mode and tried to. And this was in old Sacramento. We were out in public. So it was like very hard to compose myself. But I managed to stay quiet.
Yeah.
And she was like hysterical. She was trying, like, clawing at my clothes, like, trying to say, like, apologize.
It's like she wanted you to apologize.
No, she was trying to apologize.
Okay.
For it. And she was willing, like, to call the guy and tell him, like, it's off, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And we broke up from there, but of course that wasn't that wasn't the end of it. We ended up back together, maybe like 2 weeks later. And from then on, I never really trust her, and, uh-huh. I end up cheating. And I
really,
told, yeah, I told her about it, and then she cheated with her ex, and then
this sounds really toxic.
Yeah, it was very toxic. That's why I think about it so much. Because
did you? I mean, like. Well, what compelled you to get back? I mean, because if you already got out, I mean,
yeah,
out, like, what was it? Was it guilt? Was it?
It was. That's what it was. Because really? I started it. I started this problem, so I felt like I have to fix it.
That's fucking weird, man.
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird. It was weird.
What's interesting is I hear like for a while, me and my girlfriend have been together for a long time, and she even let me think. It would be like 4 years ago now. She called me. She was at school.
Yeah.
And in L.A. So she called me. Okay. Yeah, that's why.
UCLA.
Yeah, that's why the things were there. She called me once in the middle of the night, and she was like, listen, I don't want to be with you anymore. And basically, like, the long and short of the reason why is she was bored of being with me, and she didn't know she wanted to be. Which, fair point. I was a boring dude. When I was in, I wasn't a comic then. I didn't have any inner, I didn't have an inner life or any of that bullshit. So I was a boring dude. And looking back on it, it totally makes sense. But she broke up with me and we were done.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And then, for those months, it was weird. Like the moment after you've broken up with somebody, that's like that's you at your most fragile and your most defensive because it's like fuck, like you just got hurt basically. And I started like trying to try to talk to this girl in my class,
uh-huh.
just like immediately.
Yeah,
after like the next couple of days because I didn't know what else to do.
Right,
because it's weird. Like the moment when you're done with a relationship and you go back to being single, you don't just know how to be single again.
Yeah,
it's not like
you don't know how to just be a person.
Yeah, you need some. Like there needs to be like a transition. They should have a place for if you break up, you can get single dude orientation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what friends are for, though. That's what friends are for.
Yeah, but I didn't have those.
Exactly.
That's, I was just like out. I was on my own, basically. Of, like, I don't know what the fuck to do. And in those couple of months, like she finished. She moved back because she had finished school,
mm-hmm.
so she moved back up here, and it's like during that time, I was like, well, I don't know what to do. Cause I felt at some level, I felt like kind of like guilty. Cause like she wanted to get back together. And I was like, well, I started putting in work at this other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I don't know what, like, I don't know how I was supposed to feel about anything. Like, am I supposed to feel happy that you're back? Or am I supposed to feel like guilty?
Yeah.
And how should I feel about this other person? Which thankfully didn't go anywhere. Cause she's a horrible person, but I don't know how much I can say. Oh, fuck. She'll never. She had a tattoo of an elephant in her thigh. I'm like, Jesus Christ. It's. No, you can't. But it's in color. It's in color. It's a color tattoo of an elephant on her thigh. I have to complain about this. What the fuck? You can't like elephants that much.
The thing is that's funny about that is, like, I would not have a problem with that. I would not have any problem with that. But the thing is that I know exactly why you have a problem with that. And that's like, that's the horrible person for you. I would never suggest you talk to a tattooed elephant girl. But me, clear selling.
So you're fine with that?
I'm totally clear selling. My ex had a tattoo of a violin on her back.
Why?
A violin shaping. I've seen that tattoo other places. She told me this tattoo was based on the idea of, like, it's shaped like a violin. I guess she learned how to play the violin when she was earlier. And because at the time, she was really into feminism, and she was a feminist, and I guess she still probably is one. It was supposed to be shaped like a woman. So
a violin?
A violin shape. It was an outline, not the actual violin, just the outline of a violin.
Oh, okay.
I get that. And it was on her back.
Okay. Weird.
So, yeah, it was kind of weird. But I'm like, I've seen that tattoo other places since then.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. It's not just unique. It's not unique. It's a very broad, stupid idea that other people are doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I know. I mean, the guilt thing is very... For me, at the beginning of the relationship, it was guilt. And then also, you know, when you deal with someone for a matter of time, you get some attachment to it because you have a guilt and then you compound that with other emotions of right. of caring about the person. So
it's hard to let go of guilt, though.
Yeah, it's really hard with guilt, because I'm not really a guilty person in general. Like, I'm not guilty of most things that I do.
Yeah.
So to ever feel guilt, it's like, it's easy to manipulate me when you now make me feel guilty. I know that's a weakness of myself.
And that seems, well, to me, that seems like that would be a negative. That'd be a bad relationship to be in if it's like, if you're compelled to be in it because of guilt.
Yeah, well, I think it started with guilt, and then from then that point on, it was more so out of habit.
Really?
Yeah, because you become used to, I think, the feeling of being around somebody, and also, since it's based on guilt, but then it becomes a habit of things, because the person, like, my ex was someone that a lot of the comics that when I started saw. So it's just so much was going. So she was so deep in my life, like she really? Knew my family. I introduced her to my family. She went to my great grandma's deathbed, like things like that. It's just like a lot of things happen.
Right.
So that it's very hard, even looking back at the relationship, which is why I obsess about it, is differentiating those aspects of her and the fact that she was also really bad person to me. Like, she was a good... I think it's very strange for me to say this, but I think she has the archetype of a girlfriend, but she has the traits of an evil person. She has the traits of my villain. She has the traits of my villain in my story.
Okay.
But she's a good person. She's not a horrible person. She's just a bad person for me.
Okay.
It's hard for my head... to go, when I start to go into those obsessive states, like, to start separating those things and be like, all right, she's a bad person for me, but a good person in general.
Yeah,
and then after the relationship, you know how things trickle out.
Yeah.
That's probably where the obsession began, is where I would hang around her still, and that's another toxic thing. You never should do that. You should get as fucking far away as possible from whoever you break up with. Even if something good comes out of it later on. Like, you gotta get away just to sort out your fucking brain. But being around her afterwards, she went to my birthday. My birthday was like a week or 2 weeks after we broke up, or 3 weeks after we broke up. And I had set that date on my calendar at work to be off. And so we ended up going to San Francisco together.
Right.
And you start to feel like, even though it was based on guilt, there was still love there. So... you feel it in the air. It's gone. And it's an emptying feeling to be like, why am I next to this person? Like, this is totally out of habit.
Yeah. So then after a while, it's just how much can you take?
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, I went with her, cause she was going through things herself. Cause I know her pretty well after 2 years that she has, she herself has, cause we ended up going to counseling together, and I hate counseling.
Really?
I abhor. I don't hate it. But I am definitely not the guy for counseling. I know what's normally wrong with me, and it's more so, I think counseling, the purpose of it would be just to tell them and be like, hey, man, what should I do?
Yeah, like,
not
like
what's wrong
with
me.
You'd be going to get advice or something, like, not so much like, what's my problem?
Yeah, I don't know really. I know what my problems are. I just don't know sometimes how to solve them.
Right.
And I think that was what it was. But I knew that when I was, we went there. It was such an interesting thing because she went to counseling because of her cheating. Of her cheating and her behavior. And they were like suggesting basically you shouldn't be in this relationship because you don't seem like you're mature enough or old enough for this relationship.
Okay.
And then we ended up going in and she wanted to talk about that. And I guess also because her dad, she had, of course, dad issues, right? Right. That's not obvious at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
But she had issues with that. And that whole aspect of it was, it's just so much shit that happened in the relationship that took up 2 years of my life. And it wasn't many people around me, like friends or things like that, that I could tell about it. So it was kind of like an untold story that I was burdened with. And I'm still kind of burdened with because I don't know really how to package it and be like, all right, that's it. And that now I can.
It sounds almost like, to me, it sounds like you're obsessing about it because it's like, how could I have been... how could I have been the person to do that?
Yeah.
Because I don't imagine... because I know you're not a bad dude, But I do know, like, I just think, like, the way that I felt when my girlfriend was, you know, back around again.
Yeah.
Where it was like, well, fuck, am I a bad person?
Yeah.
And I really started to obsess about, well, no, my, that was okay. I didn't do anything wrong. Or, you know, we haven't done anything, so we just talking. And, yeah, we were broken up and all that shit happened. Like, there's a lot of, like, you obsess about it not so much because it's interesting or anything. It's just that, like, you kind of have to reconcile being, doing stuff.
Yeah.
In a light of, well, fuck, am I the kind of person who would do a horrible thing?
Yeah, and that too, and then also the getting back with her probably affected me too.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Because doing that, since it was based on guilt, but then it becomes a thing about, well, it's the reason why it's easily to manipulate that guilt is because then you make people feel like they deserve what you do to them. Whatever you do to them at
so,
that point.
Oh, so you were, so it's like, because you were in the relationship and it was awful, but it's because, like, at some level, it's like, well, I mean, it's like this for me, so this
is what
I
should get.
Yeah, it's
like this because, and I start to blame myself because I started this trend. Like, yeah. If I didn't start this, it wouldn't be like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was my, like, almost my motive to fix everything, to even, like, try to understand her problems to the nth degree. And I mean, and that's something that I like about, that I pull from the relationship is that I think I've become way more understanding of other people.
Uh-huh.
Because I understand that, like, people have problems. Like, people have origin stories. Like, I know how people became how they became. And I'm understanding of that. And I'm less judgmental, but I think I wasn't very judgmental beforehand. But
right.
Being in that relationship brought that out.
Like it taught you how to really think about, well, if someone does something, it's not because they're a bad person, but it's because it's like either they're bad for you or that they just have...
They have problems.
They have problems and this is how that comes out, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm okay understanding that. It's just that how do you sort... What the best way is to handle it is sometimes you probably have to just step away and...
And or then, you gotta express it.
Yeah, and I think I've heard of this before, is sometimes you'll find yourself in situations where either you just don't feel good about whatever's going on, and uh-huh. that's a self-esteem breakup, whether that's a self-esteem breakup from, like, working at a certain job or being with a girl. Like, this doesn't make me happy, get away. And
right,
that makes
you
feel so much better in the long run, because you know that, well, that's my worth, I'm not dealing with that.
Right.
And that's probably what I obsess about that, the guilt, and did I really keep doing that with her?
Yeah.
Like, that is like, did I really do that? I did all that with her. Like, that, was it really worth it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that,
it's like, how do I, like, because that kind of shit, it's like the stuff where you're like, seriously, that kind of stuff, it's hard to put in perspective with the rest of who you are.
Yeah, yeah, that's the biggest thing, because anytime I told a friend that I got to know about it, they're like, really?
Yeah.
Like, you dealt with that shit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's something that almost everyone in my family, when they found out about it, they were like, on one end, because they knew her, and
yeah,
I think they
yeah.
like her more than they like me, on face value. Like, because they know me. Like, I'm argumentative. They don't really know her other than the happy face and the smiley
face.
And the, I'm here for you, I'll help you, the family out, whatever way I can, if you need my help. The customer service face, basically.
Right.
But that they only know her by my word and what happened.
Uh-huh.
And that also, like, compounds the, like, did I deserve it type of things. Like, it's just like, I think you deserve, and I'm not very forgiving to myself or other people when things like this happens. I think that's another thing that that makes it hard, because I don't really forgive myself for it.
You don't forgive yourself?
No, I don't, oftentimes.
Well, like, why?
Because I feel like, well, you deserve it. You got what you
got. I mean,
but
like,
at that same token, I could have left.
Well, yeah, but it's also like, I mean, forgiveness is not, you're not absolved.
Yeah.
It's like, forgiveness is like, forgiveness is more like you accept. Like, yeah, you still, it's still like, maybe not the best thing you could have done, but it's like, You're done paying for it.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
So, like, that's weird. You don't really forgive yourself for your role in it.
Well, yet? No, I don't, because I feel like it's actually often easier, and I think it's something that was a part of the relationship. It was always easier for me to forgive her, and even in her part, for her to forgive me, than it is to forgive ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And it's probably why the relationship lasted so long, because we didn't forgive ourselves.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it
yeah.
made us stay together.
So it's like, because you blame yourself, it's kind of... Well, that's kind of weird.
I know, it is.
Yeah, because it's like, I wonder how many relationships are like
that. right? I think that...
I know that is definitely a part of mine. I hope it's not a big part, but yeah, there is some level of guilt, and I feel bad. I feel bad about the things I've done. And I'm sure she feels the same way in some levels.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, maybe, you know. Right now, I'm sure right now she's... because we're not... She's away right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure right now she's kind of thinking about, you know, maybe, you know... Maybe I'm not in this for the right reason or something like that. I wonder that if it's a... Like, accepting... Like if you're cheating on somebody, then what you're saying is like, I don't want to be with you, but I don't know how to tell you.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I feel. And then you would feel guilty about not so much the cheating, but just like, I can't be honest.
Yeah, I can't be honest with this person.
Yeah,
and I think that the weirdest part of the relationship was the ending part. Was that about like 6 months? And 6 months at the end of it, I didn't cheat or anything, which she did, and she did it like on an astronomical level,
like a lot.
Like, she did it a lot, and she did it in embarrassing ways, like people that I would know. Like, not, like, people I knew directly, but people that knew me. And okay. I knew them, but we knew each other by name. And so maybe we'll cross each other. So that's just an embarrassing level of it. And then also, I didn't know about it that much, other than by suspicion.
Right.
And then when I found out about it, it was just like, it was just really like, how did you become this person? Because I knew... that she had that in her, but it was like certain shit that was like, really? The guy across the street?
Yeah.
How the fuck do you do that? Like, and think that that's okay. And it's also because I think she has a tendency to play victim. And by being in, like, trenched in her life, knowing her family too and meeting them and everything like that, they don't know what she was like, so they kind of always take her side, and everybody else around me kind of takes her side, and by being around her after the relationship, and that being so, it made it like, oh, am I really the bad guy? Did I create a villain? Did I create this person?
Yeah.
So that's the guilt that I deal with, that makes me obsessed about it, because I'm outside of that situation, there's very little that you can make me feel guilty about.
But that's definitely part of it.
That's something that I feel very guilty about.
Huh.
Like, that relationship is the only thing I can focus on that I've ever felt guilty about enough to do something about it. So, I understand Catholics on a little level.
That makes more sense.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, being guilty all the time, yeah, I get it.
I get it. You can make people do some crazy things with guilt.
Yeah, I believe so. That's weird, man. I've never heard you talk about that. I had an inkling of it in the sense that you do bring it up, like, oh my... You say my ex, and you say it in this kind of an angry way, like, oh, my ex. Like, that's how it comes out often.
Yeah.
And you do a couple of bits about anger towards the situation or kind of, you know, comical.
Yeah.
I think of the bit like, man, there's no way she could stand up against four of us. She wouldn't have a chance. Like, that bit I think of, like, that's pretty funny. And that's probably a thing that a lot of people would understand. But there's nothing like... You've never really told me the specifics about it.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
I never... It's such an embarrassing relationship for me. And I don't know if it is for her. Because I think she knows how to tell other people about it. And she has probably reconciled certain parts of it.
But you don't have that ability yet.
Yeah, I don't really know how to reconcile it or even tell people about it in a way that's like, oh, I'm proud that I got out of it or something. Something to be proud about or something to feel like, oh, okay. The only thing that I can ever reconcile with it, and that's maybe the comedy side of me, but I need for my own self, I think one of my vices is pride or a level of arrogance. And the only thing that I've ever talked about on stage that's like arrogant is probably the peasant's joke.
Yeah.
But beside that is probably the way that I always look back on the relationship as that was such an entertaining relationship. It was like so entertaining.
You were never happy, but you were also never bored.
I was never bored. At the beginning, I was thinking, oh, I'm bored. And then all that stuff happened.
Yeah.
I was like, this is never a boring relationship.
Have you tried, like, is there a reason you haven't approached more of it with your comedy mind yet? Is it like you don't know if it's funny or if you're not ready to face it yet?
I don't think I'm ready to face it. A lot of the stuff I did in the relationship was like, you're a bad person type of stuff. And I don't know how to say that on stage without it being like, oh, you really are a bad person, instead of, oh, that's a funny person doing something bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd have to come at it with a proper, yeah, that, I yeah, you, well, self-deprecating humor normally works that way.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, it's you misdirect the deprecation, like, this is terrible, but I don't notice it. Or it's like, you create a separate persona, like, here's a guy named Idris who looks just like me, but fucked up. Here's how. Like,
yeah.
It's something like that. Like, you need to find a way to kind of, because if you were able to make jokes about it, then you would have to, at some level, have processed it in a way that is external.
Yeah, and then that's only certain parts of it that I've been able to externalize, like her feminism, which was never really, all the things that I had that I talk about on stage,
yeah,
are things that I didn't have really a big problem with her, like even the hitting her and stuff like that afterwards, like that joke about the four people. That joke is not something it's just funny. It's not really something. It was, I also try to frame it as a dream. Like, it's not an actual thing.
Yeah.
It's not something I really, really feel.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in there that I think, like, with the proper turn, it could be like, she was a feminist. She didn't believe in traditional relationships, which is why she cheated on me all the time.
Yeah, I had a joke about that. But it was me in the joke when I first said it. But
yeah,
things like that. But, yeah, I think that's something that it takes time. But I think after, the weirdest thing about this relationship, I find it entertaining, but I think that after I process all of it, it won't be, it'll be too late for me to make it funny. Because I think when I process it, I'll be at peace with it, and then I won't want to talk about it anymore.
But people talk about divorces for a long time.
Yeah, and I hate those guys. So.
I hate all of them.
I don't really don't like them, and I don't like when I even talk about it. So it's just like, ugh.
Well, what's interesting to think about is when you have events or incidents that you don't talk about on stage, or that you don't express in a creative, like, that is, to me, that's the kind of thing that helps builds a different persona for you.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, you know, there are guys who don't shut off.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, who they are on stage is who they are off stage, is they have the totally synchronized, like, honest kind of, even if it's not, even that, what they're saying doesn't have to be true, but there's an honesty in how pure their self is. And if there's something that you don't bring to stage, that kind of indicates, like, well, then at some levels, like, what is on stage is different.
Really. Yeah.
Like, do you feel like you don't want your comedy guy to have, like, do you feel comedy Idris is not the Idris who should have this girlfriend experience?
I don't know, because I know now I'm in a very different place than I was then.
Yeah.
And I think it would make more sense then. That's the only thing about it is just time. But then when I was talking about it on stage, but it was never funny. It was never really that funny.
Right.
I would find ways to make it funny out just by talking about things like to the side of it. But it was, I don't know if my persona, I would more so want to be honest on stage. So I just don't know where it even fits on me off stage, really.
Really?
Okay. I don't even know where it fits in my, like, story arc if I look back on my life. Like, this seems such a thing that happened. Like, it seems like an alternative universe.
Side story. It was thing. Earth 2,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, like, it seems like but I was there, and I totally feel for that guy.
Yeah.
I feel for that guy, but it doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like me. It doesn't feel like I was, I still don't even feel like I've really grown up to a point where I'm like, oh, this is Idris, and this is who Idris is probably going to be for the rest of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those type of core things, but there's things about those responses that I had, that guilt, that I don't really resonate with.
Yeah.
In general, it's just like, it's those kind of things that just I don't know how to make that line up with the rest of me. So I don't know how to make it work on stage yet.
Well, you know, work on it.
Yeah.
That's all you can do, man. It's yeah. like, cause it's like, I mean, we talk about a lot like, oh, you be honest and come at like, right from an honest place. But it's like, to be honest is to basically, like, you can't have off limits kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's the burden of being an artistic kind of a person is everything is fodder.
Yeah.
Which, okay, that's fine in the abstract, but what if you have something nightmarish? What if you have something terrible, like when you were hurt or when you were broken or when you were sad or when you almost died? Like, those kind of horrible experiences. If you're saying that everything, like, you know how there are people who like get pissed off at like a joke, like, oh, you shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing. Like, there are people like that. Well, I mean, you're a human being as well, and you can say, like, well, everything is fine, but when you apply that to your own life, then you can start to see, like, well, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable if I heard someone telling a joke about this thing for me specifically. So it's like, how am I gonna get over my own hang-ups?
What's the funny story is, this is funny. I remember, I don't know if you remember, Hamburger's jokes. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name.
Neil Hamburger?
No, not him. Chinese friend.
Daniel Hamburger. Hamburger.
All right. Anyway, wait. All right. This is the point. Well, he got on stage. He does this joke about cheating, right?
Right.
I don't know if you've heard the joke, right?
Is it the one, it just gets easier?
Yeah. Okay. All right. My girlfriend was in the audience. I was in the back, leaned up against the wall. This is when they, this is how they have it set up now. So she's sitting in like maybe the third row and the comedy spot, and I'm against the wall and I'm watching her and he's doing the joke, and then she looks back and she smiles at me after he does that joke. And I was like, yeah. And the weirdest thing about this woman is that when you see her, she doesn't look like the one. She does not look like the type to do any of these things, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have a lot of stories to tell about it. I have this issue that I did with, I tried to tell this joke, but I didn't know how to make it funny yet. Kyrie thinks it's funny. About deflating their tires, but I don't know how to make that funny at all. He thinks it's funny because it's romantic.
I understand why he thinks it's romantic. It's like you get pissed off, you slash your tires, but if there's still some love there, you just deflate them.
Right. I'm like, I get that, but I don't know if that is that Idris? I don't know.
Are you the guy who would deflate tires?
Yeah. The only reason why I didn't slash the tires is because I probably didn't want to go to jail. That's probably the only reason. I don't know if it's love at all.
That's the kind of shit you go to jail for.
That's the shit you go to jail for. It was more ridiculous than that. It got more ridiculous. It was an entertaining relationship. What can I say?
Yeah. You did a good job, man.
Yeah. I don't know. But it was a fun relationship. But there's so many other things, I think, in my life that line up with me that I have not talked about on stage. That's more so family-oriented because I just haven't.
Yeah, you keep your family stuff a little close to the vest too.
Yeah, I haven't told much about my family.
I know you live with your grandmother right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have a cousin. I feel like you have a cousin.
Yeah, well,
I don't know much else.
Most people have cousins.
Yeah, I don't know much else about you. Do you have parents and all that shit? Or?
Yeah, I have my mom. She's never been not around. It's just my dad wasn't around, but my mom was a. I was raised with my mom until maybe like sixth grade, and then we got kicked out on Christmas week, I think, from our house.
Really?
And so we went and moved in with my grandma. My grandma's husband, my grandpa, passed away. He was like the patriarch for the family.
So right.
When he passed away, it was like the family kind of splintered.
Yeah.
So, but she moved, and she moved to Elk Grove. And we moved in there for maybe 6 months. And then when she moved out, I kind of didn't want to move out. So I just ended up going back.
Really?
Because her lifestyle was, you know, it's better in Elk Grove. It's just better in Elk Grove. And I felt like I had a choice. And she had also raised my older brother mostly.
Uh-huh.
For maybe the high school portion of his life. Because my grandma's life is just better than my mom's life. And it's not my mom's life sucks. It's just that she had a very hard life in general for, like, she made a lot of decisions. Like, she had a kid early, 17. Then she had my that was my brother, and then she had my sister, and then she just had a lot of shit happen in her life.
Right, right.
But she's made it better, but it's just, you know, when you have to make it, anytime that you do things later on in life, you're going to be in debt. That's how it works. If you kind of have to do it early. You have to make the right choices.
Yeah, not really like a monetary debt, but okay, I have a debt to my family.
Yeah.
I have like a burden to raise a kid. Yeah. I have a burden to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's all right. So but your mom's still around. Like, yeah,
my mom's still around, but I think it's like a family thing. She's raising my sister's daughter now.
Where's your sister at?
My sister's fucking crazy, man.
Is she around or is she just like gone?
She's gone. She's really? Like, I have no idea exactly where she is, but they said last time she was like in Florida. Huh. So like I don't know if it's a mental thing, but she's always had kind of issues, but she's also made a lot of the bad decisions that my mom made early on in her life. Like, she had a kid at 17 too.
Uh-huh.
She had she had another kid, my niece, at 22.
Okay.
So, and it was from different people, and it's just a lot of decisions like that that was like, you know what? And then plus, I don't know really what she's gotten into in her life because she disappeared.
Uh-huh.
It makes me suspicious. I have ideas, but I don't want to say anything because I know it's not good.
Yeah,
whatever it is, it's not good. And, but she's not around, so.
Okay. You have an older brother too.
Yeah, I have an older brother.
Is he around? Is he okay?
He hasn't been around for a long time, but it's not because he's not okay. It's just more so I don't think he has too much of a life outside of our family.
Oh, really? Like he's doing okay for himself though?
I think he's doing all right.
Okay.
He's doing all right. He's doing well enough to be alive, I guess.
Yeah.
And have a place in Las Vegas, but.
That's not too bad.
That's not too bad, but I don't think it's as good as he wanted to be, and that's the thing that happens with most people at some point. I think that, well, I think most people have a brother or if they have brothers, that one of them just didn't fulfill their potential.
Hmm.
And I think we have, that my sister has two brothers that did that, so. But I'm not going to be arrogant and say, I think I have because I'm younger, I have more of a chance to fulfill my potential. Well, yeah,
you're a younger dude. You are doing kind of what you love to do already.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, you do have an education.
Yeah. And
like,
that's,
you kind of
have
something
that my brother didn't finish up on because he got a high school early. He did the exit exam. He did it at 16. He went over to from his school across the street at a community college because he couldn't go straight to college, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was 16 over there. He just, I guess he was trying to move too fast in his life.
And he wasn't ready to, yeah.
By 19, he was in the Air Force. And then he didn't end up staying in the Air Force. And then from there, when you get dishonorably discharged, you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but it was a lot of things that he tried to do that just didn't work out. Like basketball didn't work out for him, in spite of the fact that he's like 6'4 and such and such. And
all that other
stuff. It's just, you have to get on early with basketball and things like that, so. A lot of his stuff is just his potential was never reached, as in, like, he, in terms of school, like, he could have easily been a doctor, but he didn't.
Oh,
man, just things like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean.
But I don't think that's where his passion was. So.
Yeah, yeah. That's hard to find that, what your passion is. Because then when you know what your passion is, what you know, like, you feel strongly for, that helps you give perspective, like, well, then I know.
Yeah.
Because then you'll organize your life around that. Like, what can I do to enable that? And meet all my other responsibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's totally how it works. And I think that he came back for a week before my birthday or 2 weeks before my birthday. And I hadn't seen him for maybe 4 years or 5 years or something like that. And he gave me one of those speeches, you know, those talks, because he was probably the father figure beside my grandpa.
Right.
That was around because he's so much older than me. He's like 11, 12 years older than me.
Uh-huh.
So he gave me one of those talks about, like, don't ever cut or try to compromise. Don't compromise at all with what you have a passion for. And he felt like that was something that held him back. It's like so many things. He had opportunities to make money doing basketball, maybe overseas or things like that, that he didn't do because of a job or things like that. And I'm trying to find a way to have a job that is flexible enough for me to do comedy.
Yeah, like that's my goal right now with life is to find a job that's like I really want like a shitty 9-to-5 office job.
Yeah,
I would love to have one.
I was thinking about the 9-to-5 office job way, but I was thinking I'm hoping that substitute teaching does it because I cannot go in. I just don't have to go on a Friday and I could be out of town.
Right.
Or a Thursday or something like that. Make money doing something else.
And those are the kind that's the kind of shit I think about. Like, if I had that kind of a setup with my life,
yeah,
that's all I really want.
That's what I say all the time.
Yeah, at least for right now in my life, it's like, look, I don't have kids. I'm not married. I don't have to pay rent right now. So it's like all I really want in life is to know I can pay my bills because I got them.
Yeah,
and I can do comedy, and that's it. That's all I really want.
Yeah,
and it takes a long time to figure out that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But I feel like I figured it out early enough where I can do something about it.
Yeah.
It's just like how do you get to that point where that's set up right?
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm that far away from it. I just think that I have to do substitute teaching and then have a place and eat. If I could have a place, eat bills and
it's like once we get that day job portion squared away, then we're good.
Yeah, cause then I could actually that's the thing that keeps me from even asking about certain things, like even asking for a gig or something like that. I don't even ask for gigs or anything like that, but I won't ask for it because I just don't think that my life is in order for me to be that gung ho.
Right.
I could do it, and then I fall out the bottom, and I have no backup plan, no way to stay alive a week after not getting a gig or something like that. Like, so I'm putting like too many eggs in one basket type of thing.
Oh no, I get that.
And I don't want to compromise. I just want to make sure that I'm fine.
Yeah, you gotta follow your passion, but not be dragged by it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, we both have college education, so it shouldn't be a problem.
But it's fucking a problem. It's so goddamn hard.
Yeah,
being a grown up is so fucking complicated. Yeah. I hate it.
I know. I have these thoughts all the time. All the time.
Sending out applications. It's like sending out... Like, when you write a job application up, it's like you're just writing down all your hopes. Like, I'm gonna fucking... It's gonna be good. Why do you want this job? I got a life.
I wanna buy food. That's Jesus. Why I want this job. That's why I've been fired a few times.
Really?
I've quit the day that I should have been fired before. Because I knew it was coming. I was like,
yeah.
And plus, I got lucky enough to get another job, which is why I was quitting.
Yeah.
But I knew it was coming. Uh-huh. That's why I needed to get another job. And the day I walked in at this job. It was an after-school place.
Uh-huh.
And one day, I had come so late. Well, not so late, but I came late from an interview wearing dress shoes for the interview, right?
Yeah.
And I'm taking off these shoes because I'm working with kids. You can't wear shoes. I'm walking past the place. Our site was after school, at an after school place on the campus. And one of my directors, my higher-ups, was there while I was walking up with dress shoes.
And
I was like, all right, let me run to the bathroom and try to do this. So I knew then, yeah, I'm getting fired. I'm going to get fired. It's just a matter of a week.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I was like, I hope this job comes through.
So you rolled through. You're like, I'm putting my 2 weeks right now.
Yeah. So that day, she called me when I was, I had found out the day before I was getting the job. And I called that morning. And I got a call that morning from my boss saying, oh, you need to come into the office today before you go to the site. And I was like,
yeah. You're getting fired.
I'm getting fired.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. I scrambled home. I wrote my resignation paper, my letter, and I walked in there. And they were like, you could see their energy low, so they could do the firing voice thing.
Yeah,
and I was like, hey, here you go, right here. I was like, and then I resigned. And
were they like?
Yeah, they were like,
okay,
all right, and.
Did they do this? They said, "Well, no, wait, hold on."
I was like, I was happy that they were like, "No, we're firing you first before you quit." So. No bitterness. Shit. It was pretty good, though. I mean, it was a good. I liked that job, so
yeah.
I just didn't. At some point, I have a fuck it mode where in me where I start not really giving a shit about the job.
Especially, well, I mean, like, especially if it's a job, but it's kind of draining, or it's like what you're getting out of it doesn't even, like, I can't even live on what I make at this job, so why do I care about it?
Exactly. I've had that a few times with that job, and then I worked for the county before.
Yeah.
And it was just paper pushing.
Yeah.
And they didn't let me listen to music while I did it.
That's so fucked up.
And I was like, I guess it was the first month and a half, and they felt like, oh, you have to focus on your stuff. And I was like, this is that's dumb though.
Yeah,
like,
other
people in other cubicles, because they've been doing it for 3 months, they can listen to music. Like, this is ridiculous. I gotta get the fuck out of here. And they told me to leave before I could say that. So
that's well, shit. Do you think we talked about enough shit?
Yeah, we talked about relationships, we talked about being broke and living that way until
being broke. We talked about how your family's kind of fucked up, and
yeah, like most families.
Yeah, I think we nailed it. I think this is gonna make up for the one we didn't, the one that got fucked up.
Yeah, this is more personal.
Yeah, I think this one came out good, especially because the room's a little bit more set up with the lamp and the table.
Yeah, it looks professional.
I know it looks way more professional than it did, where it was just like, hey.
Yeah, it just has a Jack Daniels thing. That thing doesn't. It makes it more so your type of professional. I think this is your type of professional. I don't know what that is in there.
It's just aquarium rocks.
Oh.
It's just, yeah.
So, there's no fish tank in this house?
No, there's tons of fish tanks in this house, but none with those aquarium rocks. It's different.
I hope so. A Jack Daniels bottle being used for recycling is actually a good idea.
Yeah. It beats just getting pissed off and throwing it.
I know. See, that I feel like that was a sign that you have alcoholics somewhere in your family. Nah, I feel like, none.
No, my mom's kind of fucked up.
Good. Good. Now I don't feel so bad about my fucked up family.
It's fine. All right, cool. Well, thanks for doing this, Adrius. Right. Thanks for coming up.
Yeah, man.
All right, that's been our show. Yeah, I mean, that was a good talk. I had a lot of fun talking to Idris. I mean, I'm glad he came up again. I'm glad he decided to listen again. Next time on the show, I'm having a very funny dude. He's the first person who, well, I mean, he was one of the first people I really pissed off in comedy. And we're going to talk about that during the show. Next time, I have the very funny Mike Sella. So please stay tuned to that. I'm JoJo Lewis. Thank you for listening to The Liquor Lamp. Have a good time with whatever else you were doing as you were listening to this. This is the worst ending ever. Now, whatever it works. See ya.